Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blogging Theology. And today I'm delighted to talk to Imran Hussain. You're most welcome, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Paul, thank you for having me on. Hope you're well.
It's great to have you on, actually. The first time, I think, we met online. So
thank you very much for coming on.
For those who don't know, Imran is a researcher, a public speaker, and instructor at Sapience Institute. Currently completing his master's in Islamic studies, Imran is a diligent student of Islamic thought with a foundation in Quranic Arabic from SOAS and a degree in design engineering. With a keen interest in Quranic studies, Imran specializes in theology, nihilism, existentialism, and atheism. And his academic pursuits reflect a commitment to deepening understanding in these significant areas. Now, today, he is a fascinating subject. He will be giving a talk, a presentation on the jinn hypothesis in light of the UFO phenomenon. You couldn't get more interesting and up-to-date and controversial than this. I think it's a really fantastic hypothesis. So very much looking forward to this. So over to you, sir.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, it is a very interesting subject, to be honest. And, it's a subject that I started looking into a few years ago. Because I noticed that there was a lot of interest. Now, my interest in the subject began with this whole sort of shift in the way modern people are perceiving and understanding reality. So we know we had that sort of atheism phase with the new atheists and so on. And then we went from that sort of modernism which came with this sort of very dry naturalism towards a sort of postmodern era where people will start to experiment and started to look into things beyond the physical, yet they still didn't want to believe in God and so on. But they were more interested in, the supernatural. And I think you've done some videos on this as well in the recent past about people's beliefs in the supernatural. Yeah. And I was very interested in that shift that was taking place where people were moving away from that sort of hardline, classical, dry naturalism towards this sort of more fluid type of atheism. And along with that, obviously, especially since 2017, we've had this sort of reinvigoration of this interest towards the whole UFO phenomenon. I mean, it's always been this, always popped in and out.
Yeah.
It's always been
ridiculed. It's been beyond the pale of polite society. You couldn't talk about it in public without being laughed at. Oh, you don't believe in those two things. And that's all changed now, isn't it? Everyone's taking it really seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the biggest shift took place in 2017. So when we get to the slides, and we'll see, I'll quickly sort of, here they are. So, I'll quickly do sort of an overview of how it all sort of became mainstream and became almost like today now accepted and as a real topic to be studied. And even today we have academics now that are writing about this and discussing it and talking about this topic. So just a quick sort of summary or overview of, some key events that have taken place since 2017, which have brought this topic back to life again, if you like. And it moved out of the realm of sort of tinfoil hats and crazy wackos and fringe of society to almost center stage now of the discussion. And we see popular figures like Tucker Carlson, Joe Rogan, and others who have been talking about this extensively on their YouTube channels, on their podcasts, etc. So one of the key events I think that took place was in 2017, where we had a few publications from the New York Times, which is a very reputable news outlet in America, on the UFO topic. Leslie Keene and other authors published a few papers. And at the same time, we had an individual come on the scene called Lou Elizondo. Now, he worked in the government, in intelligence, and he was a part of this program where they were secretly studying UAPs, or as they call them now. So they've again shifted or changed the titles to, we've gone from UFOs, unidentified aerial phenomenon, or unidentified flying objects, to UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomenon. Just to make it again a bit more acceptable, because UFOs
it means exactly the same thing. All they've done is change a letter to say, oh, suddenly it's respectable. It's funny how that trick works on the mind, isn't it? Suddenly it's no longer ridiculable. It's serious, but we change a letter anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's been a few shifts, and you've seen the shift in titles as well. So Lou Elizondo came out. He was a whistleblower, basically. He came out and said, look, our governments have this program. You know, we've been studying these things. We've been monitoring them, et cetera, et cetera. He hasn't said much. He's actually got a book that's coming out, I believe, in the next couple of weeks that he's publishing. So that got picked up. That was published in the New York Times, and it created this whole storm on social media and online, and people became really interested in the subject. Fast forward to 2023, we had another whistleblower that came out, David Grush, again from the high up in the government, intelligence, etc. And in 2023, there was a congressional hearing that took place in America as well, where you had David Grush, and you can see that, I don't know if they could see on the picture right in the middle there, Grush in the middle, and then you had two Navy pilots, I believe retired, who had witnessed these objects when they were out training, flying around in airspace. And
these are very I remember, these are very sober people. These aren't fringe people. These are people of highest reputation and sobriety and known to be reliable. I mean, they had to be reliable in their jobs anyways, as pilots and so on. So they're not given to flights of fancy. So that their testimony was taken with due consideration, I think.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, to testify in Congress like this, you're literally putting yourself on the line and your career on the line. Again, with this topic, because it's, as much as it is accepted today, still people, the mainstream still, may scoff at the idea of UFOs and flying objects, however much has been accepted now. And that is gradually changing. But for them to come out and say, look, we've seen things, we've been told things, we've observed things ourselves, this is real. It's not a joke. It's a big thing. They're really putting themselves on the line. So it was in front of Congress, under oath, they testified, and there was a lot of very interesting things that were mentioned and shared, which were then to be further looked into. And we don't know how far it's gotten now as far as the back end is concerned of this. But that really, again, really pushed this whole topic forward. And then around the same time, we had we noticed some academic interest in the topic as well, especially after the congressional hearings in 2023, late 2023, early 24 this year, we had, there was a very interesting paper or an article that was published on ResearchGate by three academics, PhDs, two who are from Harvard. And interestingly, that paper was taken down. I'm not sure if it's been put back up, but it was, as far as I know, it was taken down by Harvard themselves. Yeah, and I have some speculations in regards to why they may have done that, but I think it's interesting. The first thing to note is that you have serious academics from reputable universities who are actually entertaining and discussing this topic. And not only this, this particular article discussed the second or third hypothesis on the table in regards to the phenomenon, as it's referred to, which was the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis, as they called it. And the idea was that the crypto-terrestrials, what they mean by this term is that these are beings, the beings behind this phenomenon, or the entity behind this phenomenon, is not from another planet. It's not extraterrestrial. It's from this Earth. It's been here. It's been, like Tucker Carlson says, on more of a sort of popular level, it's been here for a very long time. It's probably been here, preceded our existence on this planet. It's either been underground, et cetera, et cetera. So they entertained some of these other hypotheses. And what was interesting, furthermore, was in their conclusion, they concluded or broke it down into four main categories of crypto-terrestrials. And the one that was of real interest was what they call the magical crypto-terrestrials. Under the bracket of that, they put down demons, angels, jinn, et cetera. So it's interesting that they actually mentioned the jinn in the article, I think twice, once in the introduction as well. So as far as why it was taken down,
I just want to mention another book, by the way, which you haven't mentioned so far, also published very recently. This one, Islamic Theology and Extraterrestrial Life, New Frontiers in Science and Religion, by Dr. Shoaib Akhmed Malik, who's just been appointed to a post at University of Edinburgh teaching science and Islam, and Professor George Matthias Dieterman from the University in Doha. This is an anthology. Really good cover. It's actually a hardcore academic book. It's not in any way a popular book, but this is groundbreaking academic research in Islamic theology and extraterrestrial life, even though what you're talking about is actually something slightly different. But I just wanted to mention this is also floating around as well.
Absolutely. Dr. Shoaib is phenomenal, by the way. Actually, I've spoken to him about this, about my hypothesis, because I was planning on doing my dissertation on this. So I had a good chat with him because I knew this book was coming. And he kindly sent me sort of an early edit copy of it to sort of edit. What I read of it was phenomenal, well researched, brilliant, brilliant resource to have. And it's good you mentioned that. Yeah, sorry, Gunpo.
No, I said, and a great cover as well. Very, very, very sci-fi. Eye-catching.
Yeah, brave cover for an academic brave piece. But academic, it's brilliant. Yeah,
it has got some criticism actually for being a little bit too populist, but I think it's great.
Yeah, no, I agree. I really like it. And I think it's a good sort of segue here to mention that although what I'm positing today is a particular hypothesis, and I will give my arguments for it and reasons for it, I believe that from an Islamic perspective, theological perspective, both hypotheses, we have the room within our framework within Islam to have both. We can entertain the extraterrestrial hypotheses or the jinn hypotheses. We're not restricted theologically, you know. So, and this is an important point as well, which I'll reiterate as we go along, that I am not positing the jinn hypotheses because we are theologically restricted, because we can't claim extraterrestrial life, and therefore we have to, you know. It's not like I'm trying to insert in the gin of the, you call it the gin of the gaps, if you like, you know, trying to make an argument because we have no other option.
The gin of the gaps, not so the god of the gaps, is the gin of the gaps. But you're not doing it because, oh, we can't believe in aliens, ergo gin. Now, this is just simply a complementary hypothesis alongside other possible hypotheses.
Absolutely. And it shows the richness of the Islamic tradition. It really does, because you know, Islam allows for these interpretations and understandings. And I think it's beneficial for Muslims, especially the popularity this topic is getting now, to be aware of the potential hypotheses and the ways of interpreting this phenomenon that we have. So we can lay it all out on the table for them, and they can, you know, at least they have all of this to work with, inshallah. Books came out. So that paper came out, which was taken down. Not sure if it's gone back up. Then we also had some other publications. We have Professor D.W. Pusulka, who's a professor of religious studies. She's published a few books, two books, which have become bestsellers on Amazon. Her most recent book was Encounters, again, on the phenomenon, on the topic. We'll look at some of the things she mentions as well in regards to the phenomenon as we go along. But showing a lot of academic interest in this subject. And I also looked at the literature while I was doing research, you know, when I was potentially thinking of doing this as a dissertation. And I noticed that there was Christians had written quite a bit on this, you know, from a Muslim standpoint, there wasn't much out there. But the Christians had been, as far back as I could trace it, was at least 50 years since the 50s. Not 50 years, more than 50 years, but since the 50s, they had been writing academic pieces on this. And most of them were concluding, according to them, or their interpretation was that these were demons at play. So that was very interesting as well. So that's where we stand right now. So there's a lot of public interest, and obviously Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, and many others, many other social media influencers have really pushed this topic, been discussing it, doing podcasts on it, which has really made it popular today. So that's where we stand right now. It is a very popular topic. It doesn't seem like it's going to go anywhere. You know, it seems like it's just going to get more popular as time goes by. Even popular TV shows now we've always had this within pop culture, you know, or in cinema, movies on aliens and UFOs and all of this stuff. And they've always drawn a lot of attention. People have really been interested in this genre. But I think going forward now, we have, you know, History Channel documentaries that are coming, docudramas that are coming out, which are, again, becoming very popular, most watched shows on TV, etc. So it's very interesting times, and there's a lot of interest in this subject. Hence, you know, which led me to, okay, let's really look at this. And I have to also mention Farouk McDermott, brother Farouk. He's, you know, me and him, I spoke to him about 3-4 years ago on this topic, and he's someone that's really researched this topic extensively as well. And we've come to very similar conclusions in regards to what this phenomenon is. So, you know, a lot of credit for what we've put together here, what we're presenting here, goes to him as well for the work he's put in regards to this. So moving forward, what I want to quickly discuss, what we're going to look at today is what are the jinn, their purpose. We're going to look at sort of five key areas of comparison, what I mean by this is when we look at the phenomenon, quote unquote, the phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon, and we look at the jinn, when you study them side by side, what you see, there are some very interesting correlations, you know, similarities, if you like, you know. Correlations. Yeah, exactly. And there's five that I want to sort of...
Sorry, yeah, I was just saying very interesting that there should be.
Yeah, and the more you look into it, the more you come across. I mean, we've got maybe over 15 listed, but there's five key ones that I want to share. I think that are quite telling, and I think are sufficient to make the case that we're making, which is that this the entities behind this phenomenon are what we refer to as the jinn from the Islamic tradition. So we're going to look at the presentation, the first area of comparison, presentation and interaction, how they appear, how they present themselves, and how they've interacted with subjects or people. We're going to look at the concept of deception, or the idea of deception, which is common between, again, the phenomenon and the jinn. We're going to look at abductions. Again, maybe a surprise to many Muslims as well. Jinns, abductions, well, where are we going with this? Yeah, we'll see some of the evidence for this as well. And four, we're going to look at possession, or what you can refer to as the attachment sort of phenomenon. Again, ascribed to the UFO phenomenon and the jinn themselves. And then the fifth one, which is a recent one I've added in, which is objective. You know, what is the objective behind the phenomenon? Like, what could we sort of speculate in regards to the objective behind the phenomenon based on what we've seen and the evidence we have? And what the objective is of the jinn themselves.
Is that picture on the right?
These are the main areas.
Is that picture on the right? Is that meant to represent a pictorial representation of jinn at all? Or is that just
No, I think it's just, it's one of those images that someone probably used in one of those old manuscripts, a painting possibly. I don't think it's a sort of a wall or a cave type of inscription. It's more of a painting that someone's done. I can be completely wrong, but I just saw the image. I found it very interesting. I thought I'd use it for this.
What it's meant to be, but yeah, it looks a bit alien, a bit perhaps jinnish, but anyway, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's very interesting, actually.
Nice picture.
So just a bit before we go on, so some base sort of concepts to sort of flesh out, if you like, at this point. It's from the perspective of Islamic cosmology, we are made aware of three main beings from our sources. And obviously Allah mentions that there are other beings that he has created and scattered throughout the heavens and the earth, many that we may not even be aware of. We have the animal kingdom, etc. But there are three key beings that Allah addresses in the Quran and in the tradition. We begin in our cosmology, obviously we begin with Allah. Allah is the creator of everything that exists. He's the creator of all things. He's the maintainer of all things, the sustainer of all things, the one that has no beginning, the one that has no end. And he is not like anything we can imagine. So he is the creator of the heavens and the earth, right? This is where we begin as Muslims. And then we have three beings that are outlined, and these aren't in any particular order on screen, but we have the angels, beings made of light that God has created, that obey the commands of God. We have human beings, us human beings made of water or a clay-like substance, as Allah mentions in the Quran. And then we have the jinn, the third category of beings who we are informed are made of a type of smokeless fire or a pure form of fire. So these are the sort of three key beings. And the ones we're going to be sort of really going into, as we mentioned, are the jinn. Now, Allah mentions that Allah created the jinn from a smokeless flame of fire. What's very interesting here, I did a bit of digging in regards to, because in regards to what sort of the linguistic meaning of the Arabic word itself, Maraj or Maraja, the root of the word itself, is very interesting because it refers to a smokeless flame or a free flowing flame, which is very interesting. Now, one of the speculations, and again, it's just a speculation that I have, and I believe the others I've spoken to have as well, is that possibly this smokeless flame or smokeless fire Allah is speaking about is potentially can be plasma, which is the fourth state of matter. And it's very interesting because when you look at plasma, it's when you take a gas and you heat it to extreme temperatures, which results in the electrons, tearing away from the atomic structure and moving away from it, free flowing away from it. So that notion of free flowing is captured within the Arabic word itself, the sort of group meanings of the word itself. But again, it's just speculation, and Allah leaves it as smokeless fire. So, we can stay there. But I think it's also interesting because there's a lot of research in regards to plasma physics these days as well. And there's always this discussion about plasma life forms and all of this type of stuff as well, which is very interesting. Or plasma holograms. Again, maybe too much to go into here, but I just wanted to put that out there. There's a lot to look into for anyone that's interested in this. So we're told that they're made of a smokeless fire. This is what they come from. And as far as their purpose is concerned, Allah informs us as with our purpose. So this is something, one of the things we share in common with the jinn, which is that Allah tells us He created us for no other reason except to know Him and to worship Him. So the jinn and mankind were made or created for the sole purpose or the fundamental purpose of knowing our Creator and worshiping Him. So which is very interesting. We have this shared purpose, which is to know God and to worship Him to the best of our ability as human beings and as jinn kind. Now, a bit about the origins or that sort of origin story or the relationship between man and jinn. And again, this will, you know, make more sense as we go through this and as and why this is relevant as well. This is very interesting. When you look at the story of the creation of Adam, we see that Allah creates Adam without going into too many details. And then at one point, when Allah breathes the soul into Adam, Allah tells the angels to prostrate to Adam out of respect. And all of the angels, as we read in the Quran, prostrate to Adam immediately out of respect. But Iblis refuses to prostrate to Adam. Now, in the Islamic tradition, we don't believe, you know, in the concept of fallen angels. We believe that the jinn, we believe in the jinn who, you know, inhabit this earth as well. Now, Iblis wasn't an angel. This is another sort of misconception some people have. According to at least orthodoxy and the mainstream view, Iblis was a jinn. And this is actually quite made quite clear in the Quran in a particular verse as well, that he was from the jinn kind. And he refuses to prostrate to Adam out of respect. And when he's asked as to why, he says, well, I am better than him. So there's a show of arrogance here. You know, and he, you can even claim that he was the first pseudo-rationalist in history. He made the claim, you know, I am better than him. I'm made of this substance. I'm made of fire. He's made of clay. I'm far better than him. Therefore, I'm not going to prostrate to him. So he displays arrogance. He argues with God, you know, and then furthermore, he asks God for time till the day of judgment, respite till the day of judgment, for the sole purpose of misguiding human beings. So you see this, this hatred that develops through this, these interactions between Iblis and Adam in the very beginning. And the fact that Allah has chosen Adam and, you know, created this new being, Iblis can't stomach this. And then the fact that Allah has told Iblis to prostrate to Adam, he can't stomach this. He doesn't want to accept this. He believes he's more superior. He believes he's better. And he has such hatred towards the humankind that he asks for more time till the day of judgment for the sole purpose of misguiding human beings, misdirecting human beings, taking people away from the worship of God. So this is, from an Islamic perspective, this is an important narrative to have in mind, because this will shed some light later on as we go through this presentation, especially when we get to the objectives section of this presentation, as to, you know, what may be really going on in regards to this phenomenon, what its, you know, objectives are, why is it presenting itself in the way it is, what is it trying to achieve. So, quick important note, we've made this already. But I'm going to emphasize this again, that, you know, Islam allows for the possibility of extraterrestrial life. As far as I have understood it, and I believe, you know, people like Dr. Shaib and others, many others, you know, there are many verses in the Quran, or at least some verses in the Quran, which allude to the fact that there may be other life forms that Allah has created, God has created, and scattered throughout the heavens and the earth. As in verse 42, chapter 42, verse 30, where Allah says, and among his signs is the creation of the heavens and the earth, and of whatever living creature he has spread forth in both, and he has the power to gather them together when he wills, so when he will so please. This is in Quran chapter 42, verse 30. So here we see that, you know, Allah informs us. He has created many beings, many creatures. Many of them we're probably not even aware of, that he has scattered throughout the heavens and the earth. And if he chooses, he can gather them. And there are a few other verses, even in Al-Fatiha, the beginning, the first chapter of the Quran. You know, we read, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, that he is the Rabb, the Lord of the worlds, you know, in plural, of all the worlds that exist. And then there are narrations of seven earths and so on. So there is a very real possibility, you know, I would say that there is life out there in the universe. What form it takes, what shape it takes, Allah knows best, we don't know. But that possibility is there, right? Mm. So again, I'm highlighting this point to emphasize that I am not positing the jinn hypothesis because we are restricted from an Islamic perspective, that we have to look for, you know, some sort of explanation because we can't accept the extraterrestrial hypothesis. No, we can. The reason we're making this hypothesis is because I believe there, when we again study the phenomenon and the jinn side by side, the similarities are too stark to just deny or dismiss. And I think what we're dealing with really is the jinn or a manifestation of them. So again, just wanted to highlight that before moving forward. So UFOs and Jinn, a comparative study. The first thing I want to look at is presentation and interaction. Now, when it comes to the phenomenon, now, another thing what's very interesting, Paul, is, you know, yes, there's been a lot of interest since 2017, and we're getting a lot of information through the media and the government, you know, about, you know, craft that these pilots are witnessing, whether it's in the form of orbs or metallic craft or sometimes very strange objects like transparent squares with circled spheres inside them and strange things like this. It goes way back, right? This, I mean, when I started to research this topic, if you read the works of Dr. Jacques Vallée or John Keel, and many others, even D.W. Pasulka, you see that this, they trace the history back. You know, you see every tradition, every culture has spoken about encounters with either space beings or supernatural entities. You have it in Celtic law, you have it in Irish law, the good people, the fair people. You have it in Native American law. They refer to skinwalkers and they call them other things as well. You have it amongst African law and traditions. You have it within the Asian subcontinent. You have it across the world. Every culture and tradition in history has spoken about non-human beings that visit them or appear to them, and normally they are linked to the sky or coming down from the sky. Even going back to cave paintings and stuff, I mean, prehistoric people, you'll see cave paintings, especially in places like in Utah in America. We have, you know, still remnants of the natives and their work, stonework that they've done, and the inscriptions that they've put into stones. You see images of these beings that they depict, etc. So it goes way back. You know, it's not just, you know, it all starts in 2017, or even it all starts in 1947 with Roswell, the famous Roswell incident, you know, or Kenneth Arnold's sighting a few months, I believe, before that. It goes way, way back in history. And when you read the history on it, you see that these events have been taking place. People have been experiencing things throughout history. It's not new. It's not a new phenomenon. What's also very interesting is that people like Lou Elizondo, the whistleblower, and many others, David Grush, when they've done podcasts, they've also mentioned this. It seems like they've studied this as well. And they will both mention that this stuff goes way back. D.W. Pasulka, you know, she's had access to the Vatican. She's gone through some of the archives. And there's stories of saints in the past in Christian history that have experienced, you know, experiences with supernatural beings and lights and things in the sky and all of this type of stuff. So the history of this is very interesting. But the general presentation, you know, what we, the main sort of categories, if you like, people see orbs. These could be orbs of light of different varying colors, where it could be in their homes, it could be outside in forests, it could be in the sky. People see, some people have, or many have reported metallic looking craft of different shapes and sizes that sometimes materialize and dematerialize. People have had encounters with beings that appear to them, sometimes in their homes again, or when they're out somewhere. Different types of beings. Normally, many of the reports we hear of are the classic gray beings with big eyes, gray skin. And then you have other strange cryptid creatures that people have seen, very strange sort of half beast, half men, and very strange sort of things. So people have reported these types of things. So this is the sort of general appearance of these entities or this phenomenon that we hear of. Now, what's very interesting, the first sort of point of comparison, there's a very interesting narration by the Prophet where he mentions that the jinn appear in three forms. And this is not restricted to just three forms, but these are the three main forms that the Prophet is mentioning. Those that appear in the form of dogs and cats, or dogs and snakes, meaning animal-like creatures. Those that come and go, appear and disappear. And those that fly through the sky. So these are sort of three key categories that the Prophet himself has mentioned. And when we think about these categories in reference to the jinn, and you look at the phenomenon, there's things people see in the sky floating around. There's things that people see that come and go. And there are, you know, beings or entities people have seen. We know that shayateen, at least the shayateen, the evil amongst the jinn, have appeared to people in the form of human beings. There's a narration of or a hadith by Abu Huraira, where he mentions that he was put in charge. It's recorded in Bukhari. He was put in charge of the charity. And as he was safeguarding the charity, on three nights back to back, a man appeared who stole from this charity. And Abu Huraira threatened to take him to the Prophet, peace be upon him. And each time he made an excuse and he got away. And on the third night, he was going to take him. And he said, look, I'll give you something and I'll share something with you. And he shared the Ayatul Kursi, which Muslims recite. And he said that this will protect you if you recite this. So it's very interesting. And the Prophet ﷺ, when he later went to the Prophet ﷺ told him or informed him that this was the shaitan. This was an evil jinn, because the shaitan is the jinn that appeared to you. And he actually told you some truth, although they lie, and he did lie. So we know the nature of the jinn is to lie and to deceive, which again, we'll touch upon as we go along. There's a very interesting book, Alim al-Jinn wa Shayateen. This book, The World of the Jinn and Shayateen by Sheikh Umar al-Askar, Dr. Umar al-Askar, Ashkar, is a very, very interesting book. It's probably one of the best books in the English language on the topic of the jinn. Probably the most comprehensive that I've come across. Along with this, if you're looking for more of an academic book to sort of accompany this, although this is very academic as well, there's a book called The Intelligent World of the Jinn. I think I have it somewhere further down in the slides. Again, that sort of tackles it more from a Arab history perspective as well. But what he mentions in his book is that, you know, the shayateen have throughout history appeared to people in the form of men, or other beings, and they have, you know, deceived them or tried to deceive them in this manner. Shaykhul Islam Ibn Taymiyyah, for example, Ibn Taymiyyah mentions in the Essays on the Jinn, which is again a phenomenal read, and it really blows your mind when you read it in regards to the jinn, because he mentions certain things which
I didn't come across that by Ibn Taymiyyah. Actually, it's interesting. I'll look it up.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a very short book.
Right. I must say,
very short book.
Thanks for that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good read. And what you read there, I mean, it's mind-blowing, because he, for example, I'll give you an example. He mentions that some of the Sufi sheikhs that were present at the time when Ibn Taymiyyah lived, they were visited by the jinn. And the jinn, in one part, he mentions that they were given a device by the jinn. Now, this was like something like a glass panel with water flowing over it. And through this device, they could communicate with the jinn, and they could receive information through this device and communicate with people in distant places. Now, it's very interesting when you read this description. I mean, it's very similar to the modern mobile phone, if you think about it. I mean, one could speculate that what's been mentioned, like a glass-like surface where information comes up and you communicate with people at long distances and stuff like this. This was in Ibn Taymiyyah's time. He's mentioning this stuff. So these people were given these devices by the jinn. And this one point this highlights is that the jinn, you can say what we refer to as technology, that they possess their own forms of technology that they've shared with people. It seems like, at least from the accounts of Ibn Taymiyyah, with people throughout history. Obviously, for something in return, and we know that the dealings with the jinn are never in, you know, for the benefit of the human beings. Although, you know, some of these so-called magicians may believe that they're really benefiting. At the end of it, they're going to lose. They lose out. But nevertheless, it's interesting that these devices are spoken about. He also mentions that some of these people, the jinn would appear to some of these disciples of these sheikhs at the time, and they will see their sheikhs flying through the air, and, you know, see them when they were in trouble somewhere and to help them out, and then they'll return to the sheikh and say, you helped us out. You know, again, the jinn would take on the form of that Sufi master or the Sufi sheikh at the time and appear to his disciples, just to again build up the credibility of this particular individual, etc. So we read of accounts of them appearing or taking on the form of men, of people, of animals. Snakes is a very common one. There's other narrations of them appearing in the form of snakes, which will, again, this is one I'm going to mention later on. But I guess the point here is, I'm trying to emphasize, is that a key concept in regards to the jinn is that they can take on different forms. They can take on physical forms. They can appear in the form of other people, and they can appear in the form of other animals or other creatures. It doesn't seem to be the preferred way of affecting human beings. Waswasa seems to be the main form, which everyone gets time and again. Whisperings of shaitan, where he whispers to you in his own voice, in your own mind, in your minds, and he affects you in that way. But time and again, you see that there is the appearance, shaitan or the evil jinn take on the form of people and appear to human beings for whatever reason. And the fact that they could take on different forms is very interesting, right? This means that conceptually now we have a framework by which, okay, so if can we, so let's just take the example, okay, a gray alien being. Conceptually, is it coherent to sort of argue that it could be a jinn taking on this form? Yes, because they have the ability to do so. So it's an important piece of information for us that they could take on these forms. So in the presentation, it's quite startling that there are some very interesting similarities: balls of light, orbs of light, things that fly through the sky, the appearance of strange creatures, animals, other beings, humanoid type of beings, etc. There are some very interesting similarities, right? And the jinn can account for these appearances, whether it's in the form of a gray or another cryptid being. And interestingly, another, within this sort of subculture, if you like, I think it's called cryptozoology, if I'm not wrong, there is this whole concept of the Bigfoot. I don't know if you've heard of that, Paul.
Yeah, I've heard of Bigfoot. I thought that was just a myth in America.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, and it's interesting. Again, when you hear about it on the popular sphere, it seems like there's movies on Bigfoot. You know, there's classic TV dramas that will come out. I think there was a whole episode drama on Bigfoot or a Sasquatch-like creature, etc. But when you look into it and you look at, for example, again, the native history of Native Americans, you see that they have this being that they speak about, this big hairy being that's actually a spiritual being, according to them, that appears to them, leaves things behind for them. They avoid, you know, this being, you know, they don't try going into its territory within the forest, etc. So there's stuff about this being that these native people have mentioned as well. And it's again, interesting, the modern sort of paranormal, you can say, researchers or people that are looking into Bigfoot or studying it, most of them will go into the camp, the material camp, where they'll say it may be a real hominid type of creature somewhere that we haven't discovered yet, lurking, you know, running around or roaming the forests in parts of America and other places. And then there's the other camp that says, no, there it may actually not be that. It's probably more of a spiritual type of being that appears and disappears, etc. So again, from the Islamic perspective, if assuming this being is actually appearing and people are seeing it, could it be jinn? Yes, you know, because the jinn can take on different forms and appear in these forms. They could take on these forms. But anyway, the point on deception is very interesting. Now, going to Dr. Jacques Vallée, he's been writing on this subject, and he's probably the foremost figure on the topic of UFOs and ufology for the past probably 4 or 5 decades, probably longer. And in several of his books, especially the Messengers of Deception, he highlights and points out that there is a deceptive nature to this phenomenon. It deceives people. Now, he breaks this down into a couple of categories. So you can see them here. There's the intellectual abduction. There's the racist philosophy. There's the technical impotence and social utopia. The first category, what he's referring to, is when people have encounters with these beings, they are made to believe that they cannot, you know, solve their own problems in the world, that they need help from these beings, that these beings are here to help them and take care of them, and that they can't do anything and they're incapable of solving the issues and problems in the world, etc. The racist philosophy, what he's touching upon here, is the sort of idea that many of these encounters people report, they have reported that these beings, tell them that these people that are witnessing these beings are special, that they have been, there's a type of hybrid, or they're a special race, and they are chosen by these beings to do a prophetic type of job and do something significant on the planet, et cetera, et cetera. The technical impotence is some of these encounters, these people are told that, you know, that they don't have the technology they have, they're going to destroy the world, they need superior technology, and these beings are going to provide this technology to them, et cetera. And the whole idea of social utopia, where these beings tell these people that, you know, you can change the world and you can fix these problems. You have to do this, you have to do that. You can alter the whole system. So all of these false promises that are made to people when they're having these encounters. Furthermore, if you look at a very famous case, I think it was called the Betty and Barney Hill case, which became very popular, probably the most popular abduction case. They were told by these beings when they regressed under hypnosis, that these beings told them that they were from the planet Mars, a certain constellation, a certain star constellation. And prior to that, the encounters people were having prior to, you know, the discovery that Mars was uninhabitable, people could not live there, life could not survive there, and in its current state, these beings were claiming they were from Mars. And then their story changed, that they were from this constellation. And then later on, when they discovered, no, there are no planets orbiting any of the stars in this constellation, then their story changed again. So there are a lot of deceiving ideas and concepts or lies that are being told to these people during these encounters. Lou Elizondo, when in one of his podcasts, he's mentioned, the intelligence guy, he's mentioned that, you know, there is a sinister, dark aspect to this phenomenon. And interestingly, if I'm not mistaken, Lou Elizondo was, he served at Guantanamo Bay back in the day. And if you look at some of the stuff that was taking place there, there was apparently black magic rituals that, or black magic that was being done on some of these captives there. And Lou Elizondo was there. And, you know, there's a sheikh that, that did a video on this, and it's on YouTube. Where he mentioned some of the experiences with the jinn at Guantanamo Bay, which is very interesting. So apparently, Lou Elizondo is apparently there. Now, he's the same guy that's come out and whistleblown on the whole UFO, UAP topic. And he's come out and also said that there's this evil dark side to this phenomenon, which I find very interesting. Yeah, so you have him. You have another guy, Jim Simivan, who's, again, a CIA, ex-CIA intelligence guy. He's directly said on video that he likens this phenomenon to the jinn. He's a non-Muslim. You know, he's someone that's very intelligent, respected, had a respectable job, etc. So these guys are making the links themselves, you know, and I'm sure they haven't really looked into, most of them haven't looked into what Islam has to say in regards to the jinn themselves. So you see that there is this deceptive nature of this phenomenon that comes across, especially in Vallée's work, and John Keel's work is very important. He's written the book on the Mothman prophecies, etc. He did a lot of work on this as well. Him and Vallée both, including Pasulka, highlight the deceptive nature of this phenomenon. And we know from the Islamic tradition that Shaitan or Shayateen, the evil jinn, deceive people. In the Quran chapter 4, verse 120, Allah says, Satan only makes them false promises and deludes them with empty hopes. Truly, Satan promises them nothing but delusion. Shaitan has continuously tried to, and you know, one of the ways he tries to deceive us is by lying to us and promising false things to us. And this is an interesting passage in the Quran, again, going back to the origin story. But Satan whispered to him saying, "Oh Adam, shall I show you the tree of immortality and a kingdom that does not fade away?" So the way Shaitan tempted our father Adam was through giving him these false promises. You know, that this tree, it will give you immortality. You know, it will give you this kingdom. Again, you see how Shaitan, and this highlights to us, and it's good for us Muslims to know as well, that, you know, Shaitan, when he gives you whispers and the way he will try to misguide you, one form is that he will come and he will try, he will give you lies. He will scare you with lies and so on and so forth. So the deceptive nature of Shaitan is abundantly clear. There's another narration here. Which highlights all of the, so this is talking about the idols from the time of Noah. So the what's been said here is that many of the deities that the Arabs were now worshipping just prior to Islam, or just as Islam started to be preached in the Arabian Peninsula, these deities come from the time of Noah. Now, initially, these were just people of respectable people, pious people. When they passed away, people made statues of them. You know, and then the first generation, they just saw them as statues and like, okay, these are just special people. Then within a generation, the next generation started to worship and idolize them. So Shaitan works in steps. You know, he gradually misguides people and misleads people. And from what's clear from this as well is that the objective comes across quite apparent, which is he wants to take people away from the worship of Allah, of God, towards the worship of anything else. So as long as he can sway humanity away from the worship of God, you know, he's happy. That's his primary objective. So the deceptive nature is there amongst the phenomenon and the jinn. Now, when it comes to abductions, this is a very interesting one. This is a passage from a book by John E. Mack. Now, John E. Mack was a Harvard professor. He was the head of psychiatry in Harvard. And he was a very respectable academic. And he decided to study the abduction phenomenon. He wrote a book, I think it's called Abductions. He wrote a book on this topic as well. And what he highlights, as you can see on this by this passage here, he outlines that this is not mass hysteria. People are not having mass hysteria. These are people that are having experiences that, you know, when they share the experiences and you collect the data and you take these, you know, what people are seeing in it and have experiencing during this abduction phenomenon, and you correlate the data, you see that they're having very similar experiences. Yet they haven't you know, cross-corroborated or shared information with each other. So it's not just mass hysteria. These are people that may live across the world in different parts of the world who are having very similar experiences, and they are sharing their experiences. So he believed that there was more to the abduction phenomenon than just people dreaming or seeing things or just a psychological event. And he was ridiculed for this quite badly as well, as, you know, it's probably not surprising. Sorry, Paul, you say?
I can imagine that they did ridicule him. Sorry, I was disagreeing with you. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think going back to the paper that was taken down by Harvard earlier this year, again, it may be back up, I haven't checked, but some of the speculation around that was because Harvard had run into some of this, I guess people looking at them funny, and you know, why is Harvard dealing with aliens and UFOs and ET and all of these topics? Mm-hmm. When John E. Mack published this, so they didn't want the same to happen again in 2024 with the two Harvard professors authoring this article. So maybe that was one of the reasons they pulled it down or redacted it. But you know, again, we don't know, you know, what the real reasons are, but it may possibly be related to what John E. Mack did, you know, that he published this book, he did a lot of work in this, and you know, his conclusions, he really believed people were really experiencing something very real. And this was, again, very difficult, as we can understand, for people to swallow, you know, because, you know, as a professor of a reputable university in the secular age, to talk about such topics is not fashionable, right? So, but you have to commend these people. And I commend the Harvard professors as well, who actually were brave enough. And there was Dr. Masters from another institution, I don't remember which one, who again co-authored. So there are three authors to this article. You have to commend them for being brave enough to talk about this topic on an academic level. So abductions, according to the, you know, top academics that have actually studied this, you know, and have concluded that there's more to this phenomenon. And if you look at beyond the academic sphere, I mean, people have been reporting abductions for as far as you can, you know, look back. People have been reporting this phenomenon. We see it within the Islamic tradition as well. There's a very interesting narration. I'll just paraphrase. I'm not going to read the whole thing. We're in the time of Umar ibn al-Khattab, when he was the emir. An interesting event happened where a man basically disappears, right? His wife comes to Umar and says, "My husband has disappeared. It's probably been quite a long while. And I think she wants to get married again." And he says, "Give it 4 years." So she goes away and she returns after 4 years and she says, "He's still not back." And then Umar gives her permission to go and get married again. And what would you know, the guy appears again, comes back after a very long time. And he says, "You know, where's my wife?" You know, and then Umar basically says, "Well, look, you were gone. No one knew if you were alive, if you were dead." And then basically he says, "Well, what's your excuse?" And he says to Umar that I was going to pray Isha one night and a group of jinn abducted me. They took me away. And they kept me as a captive for many, many years until another group of jinn, believing jinn, came and they defeated them. And they realized I was Muslim. So they asked me, they said that we can't keep Muslim captives because we're believers. Maybe it's a rule that they have amongst themselves. So they offered him, you know, "You can either stay with us as a free man or you can return back." And he chose to return back. So they brought him back. And they dropped him off, I guess, where they, you know, to his home. And that was his reason. And interestingly, Umar accepted this. So what this highlights to us that this was not, this probably wasn't a unique occurrence or a one-off occurrence. Things similar were probably reported at the time of Umar radiallahu anhu. And there's other narrations, such as, you know, narrations about of the Prophet ﷺ about keeping your kids in after dark. And not letting them go out so they're not snatched by the jinn or taken away by the jinn. So the concept of the jinn taking people away, in Ibn Taymiyyah's essays, again, he mentions that there are reports of people that are taken out of their homes by the jinn at night, taken through the walls, literally, he says, in the essays, and out of the city gates, and there's lights in the sky, and they've taken away. Furthermore, you know, again, it's just come to mind now, Sheikh Umar al-Askar, Dr. Umar al-Askar, in his book, The World of Jinns and Shayateen, he dedicates three pages in his book, page 184 onwards, to this topic. And he mentions, you know, that he believes that the UFO phenomenon is related to the jinn for many of the reasons that we have stated. So again, it's not something new. It's not a new theory we were presenting. You know, some of the scholars of the past have mentioned this as well. Umar al-Asqar directly mentions it in his book, and he puts down the whole UFO phenomenon to the jinn itself. But interestingly here, we see that the abduction phenomenon does exist in the Islamic tradition, and it's directly ascribed to the jinn. The jinn abduct people, have abducted people, and here is one specific case of that. So again, a clear parallel between the UFO phenomenon or the abduction phenomenon within the UFO phenomenon and the jinn. The final or the fourth one is possession and attachment. Just a quick note on this one. So there's a new term that they use within the sort of UFO research sphere. It's called the hitchhiker effect. This is, as the name quite evidently suggests, it's like when people go to these areas where there is high strangeness or where people have experiences, most times they leave with something that becomes attached to them, literally hitchhikes with them out of that place and then gives them trouble later on. Skinwalker Ranch is a very interesting place, again, in Utah, in America. There's actually a documentary that History Channel have been running for the past, I think, 4 or 5 years, documenting, you know, they've got some scientists on the ranch now in Utah, at Skinwalker Ranch, and they are trying to document this phenomenon, which is baffling them, and they can't really make, you know, sense of it anyway. And again, it's a TV show. So how much truth there is to it, Allah knows best. But I think it's very interesting. Again, it's a very popular show and it's become one of the best shows on the channel. But there is the hitchhiker effect that's mentioned there. Government officials that have gone onto the ranch, they have left with something that's become attached to them. And that's not only affected them, but it's affected their family members over the months and years later. Jim Simivan, I mentioned earlier, he had a hitchhiker type of experience as well, where something became attached to him and his family and then troubled them, and they saw things and, you know, were terrorized by these entities and so on. And again, it's very similar to the and this is probably the easiest one for people, for Muslims especially, to understand, because, you know, just as a sort of a side point, when you think about the concept of jinn amongst the Muslims today, the notion is very narrow. So when we think about the word jinn, we think, okay, supernatural beings that possess and are evil. And it pretty much stops there, right? But there's so much more to the concept of jinn that we're not aware of. And this one is probably the most evident one, you know, which is this whole possession phenomenon or attachment phenomenon. You know, people get ruqya done when they have attachments or possessions. Now, these terms, obviously, you know, many people define them in many different ways. But I think it's interesting that you're having something similar. When someone is affected by jinn or possessed by jinn, again, there's something follows them, goes back with them, terrorizes them, affects them, can psychologically affect them, put them into some, you know, lead to mental illnesses, can affect their family members, et cetera, et cetera. So that this particular point of comparison is quite evident and quite interesting, that we're seeing this amongst the UFO phenomenon. And it's interesting. I think this is going to be news for some people, because when they think about UFOs, you don't think about attachment or hitchhiker effect or, you know, beings that appear and are supernatural type beings. You would just think about, you know, saucers flying in the air, you know, UFOs flying in the air. D.W. Pasulka mentions this in a book, Encounters, that what we're seeing even today, as much as the topic is being accepted in the mainstream media, is just one part of the story. You're just shown the nuts and bolts, as they call it, you know, the physical craft or whatever they're capturing on camera, etc. But there's so much more to it. People that have these experiences, they have follow-on experiences where they see things, beings approach them, tell them stories, you know, demonic figures appear to them, terrorize their families. All of this stuff is happening, but most people don't mention this because, again, this is just too weird and too strange for them to mention. They just feel they'll be ridiculed and ignored completely. But this is a real aspect of the phenomenon which is going on as well, which is being documented. So this, again, is in line with the possession phenomenon that we see within Islam. Now, the objectives. So this is the fifth part or the last part of comparison. And I think it's an interesting question to ask. Now, from the Islamic perspective, the perspective of jinn, it's quite evident what the objective is. You know, Allah mentions it in the Quran. You know, it's very clear on this, that the jinn, the shayateen, their objective is to misguide human beings, take people away from the straight path, take people away from the worship of God. We see this throughout history as well, where, you know, we see, if you read some of these, the accounts or the texts of previous cultures, they write about beings who appear to them in the form of gods, right? And therefore, these people normally see them as gods, and then they fall into submission to them and end up worshiping them, etc. It's almost like we're seeing a new modern version of that. But the thing is, from a jinn perspective, it's clear. Okay, so they want to misguide people. They want to take people away from the worship of God to worshiping whatever else. Now, if you were to look at this from the perspective of the 21st century, like we live in a time where people are secular, people don't believe in gods, people don't believe in the supernatural, people are proud of the technology that we have today, right? Now, if the jinn, hypothetically speaking, I mean, if Shaitan was to sit down with his minions around a table and have this discussion and say, look, okay, what is going to be the best way we can sort of really misguide or take people, direct people towards worshiping us, how could we do it? Now, considering the sort of techno-secular mindset that people have, taking on the form of extraterrestrial beings with superior technology, and that's what we're seeing. When we look at the phenomenon, what have we seen? We've seen the best technology that the greatest superpower of the world has today, which are the military jets, the fighter jets, the best of the best. And these craft or these things are running circles around them, and they can't control them. They can't do anything about it. What does this do psychologically? Immediately, I mean, if the elite of the world are being run circles around, then the whole of the world is going to think, well, whatever this is far superior to us, is far greater than us, right? And then if you consider all of the stories of people that have experience with these beings that tell them that we have the solution to your problems, we have the technology, we can fix your problems on Earth, et cetera, et cetera. Again, this aura of superiority is being created, you know? And if you look, again, if you go on social media and you go into these, you know, UFO, Twitter UFO or ex-UFO, as it's called now, the hashtag, and you look at these communities, many of these people, they're not religious, they're secular, they don't believe in God, but they are almost besotted over this phenomenon to the point where they just can't get enough of it. Even D.W. Pasulka, Professor D.W. Pasulka, she appeared on a podcast not too long ago last year. And at a point during the discussion, her and the host almost got giddy. They started laughing. Like, you know, they love the fact that, you know, because they started to have what they call experiences. Right now, this is a professor of religious studies who's having experiences, and they were fascinated by this, and they were talking about changing the diet and becoming vegan and stuff like this, so they can have a better connection, not drinking. It's almost like a religious experience, a new age religious experience for the secular mind, and it's phenomenal if you think about it from that perspective. What's happening is very interesting. You know, that you have this professor who's having experiences and is loving it and just can't get enough of it and wants more of it. Gary Nolan. He's been nominated for the Nobel Prize. He's, you know, a leading academic currently. I don't recall what university or institution he's a part of, but he's a big mind. And he himself, he's come out in a recent interview with the Ross Colthart on, I think, Five News Australia. And he did a full-length interview with him. And he said to him, he said, I have had experiences myself. And he shared some of his experiences that he's had. And some of his research, because one of the things he was tasked with, and he's come out with this, was to study the brains of people that have had experiences. He's a biologist, I think, and he has the technology. He's developed technology to really, so he's got the best tech in the business to do this type of study. And according to his study and his analysis, one of the things that's coming across apparently is that people that have experiences with these beings, their brains are, I don't know how to put it because I'm not really a biologist, but they're a bit more developed in some ways than the brains of other normal human beings. So almost what's being suggested now is that these people that are having these experiences are superior or chosen by these entities or these beings. So there's a very interesting sort of socio-psychological dimension to this, you know, and a religious dimension to this as well, which is very interesting to sort of analyze and study. But again, it's just too much to go sort of get into, I guess, here. But yeah, so like, what could be the objective? One of the things could be, okay, if Shaitan wants to mislead people and lead people to submitting to him, one of the ways to do it with the techno-secular mind is to appear in the form of highly technologically advanced extraterrestrial beings who are far superior to us, who may have seeded life on this earth. That's another idea that's been entertained by some of these academics, that, you know, these beings were the ones that seeded life on earth, or human life, or messed or tinkered with the DNA, you know, in the evolutionary process, etc. So there's all these wacky, crazy ideas that have been put, that have been discussed and put out there. And it seems like that it's at least some of these people are going down that road of, you know, submission towards these entities or these beings. Maybe there's another objective, you know, Allah knows best. But I think if you compare some of this, there are some very striking resemblances between the phenomenon, UFO phenomenon, and the jinn. And as you know, bro, the famous saying, you know, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, then it just may be a duck. So, you know, that's the suggestion. Well, that's what I'm positing here, is that if you look at the phenomenon and you study it, and you look at the jinn and you study the concept of the jinn, there are some striking resemblances between the two. I am yet to come across something which is different between the two phenomena, or that cannot be accounted via the jinn. You know, I'm willing to change my mind on this, but I'm yet to come across something which is true of the UFO phenomenon, which is not true of the jinn. So, for example, and I think I've got one more slide here somewhere. Oh dear, where is it gone? Okay, it's probably taken out. But there was one more slide. I probably put it, misplaced it, or not put it in there for some reason, where I talked about some of the loose ends. So some people may say, for example, okay, people are seeing physical craft, right? They're seeing physical craft flying through the sky. How is this related to the jinn, right? Well, one thing is that even in the Quran, Allah mentions explicitly in the time of Sulaiman alayhi salam, when King Solomon, when God gave Solomon the control over the jinn, that they were referred to in the Quran as builders and divers. Allah refers to them as builders and divers. So they are specifically talked about, mentioned as builders. So we know that the jinn, at least some amongst them, have the ability to build. There are stories. So if you read The Intelligent World of the Jinn, the author in there from Arab historical sources, the Arabs have mentioned the jinn to be master craftsmen. So, for example, one of the sources mentioned that the jinn would make swords, but they were unlike the swords of human swords. They were very special swords. They would not break, etc. They had very special properties, almost supernatural properties. So what's to say that, you know, the swords of today, if you look at the swords of the time, the swords of today, you can say, are the fighter jets of today. So, I mean, if you want to outdo that technology, you know, maybe they have greater technology than us, and they've outdone us just like they outdid us in the throughout history. So, you know, it's not far stretched to assume that the jinn have their own forms of technology. Going back to Ibn Taymiyyah's case, the device that was given to those the Sufi sheikhs, again, some form of technology. So it's not a stretch. Now, exactly how does that work? Are these crafts things that are built by the jinn and they're controlling them? Or could it be that jinn could take on the form of inanimate objects? Allah knows best. I don't know. It's just speculation, right? But there is a way of sort of bridging that gap, because there is that at least conceptual potential there that the jinn can make these types of things. And they seem to have throughout history outdone us from a technological perspective. They built things for Sulaiman al-Islam, King Solomon, throughout history. You know, there's accounts of them in Arab histories of building things and making things far superior to what humans have made. So it's not a stretch to say that they can outdo us today in our technology today. And the other thing was, there's this mention, just as a last thing, there's this mention of, David Grush mentioned this in the congressional hearing in 2023, that there are biologics, as they refer to. Now, again, there's no evidence for this. Biologics meaning that they were beings that were retrieved from these crashed craft that the military has possession of somewhere. Again, we don't have any evidence for this, but this was something he suggested under oath. Now, how do we make sense of this? We got the jinn, smokeless fire. These are dead beings, presumably, you know, biological, physical in some way. Well, there's an interesting narration in Muslim where there was... the Prophet mentioned that there was jinn, the jinn in Medina, some of them had become Muslim. And there were snakes that were appearing in some of these companions' homes. And one of the companions, when he, long story short, he got home and his wife was standing at the door. You know, he was like, he asked what happened. He went in and there was a big snake that was coiled on the bed. And he killed the snake. and the snake killed him. And then when they went to the Prophet and the Prophet, peace be upon him, told them that this was the jinn. It was a jinn in the form of a snake, right? So according to this narration, it seems like the jinn, at least when they appear in a physical form, can be killed, which is very interesting. So that may possibly explain any biologics that may be present. And that's one way of sort of squaring the circle and explaining these sort of more trickier aspects. But again, it's not the case where we can't explain biologics, or we can't explain physical material craft from the jinn hypothesis perspective. So yeah, that's sort of the presentation, bro. Just some final thoughts. Again, emphasizing, sure, this is one hypothesis. I believe currently, as I stand today, and many others we've spoken to, I can't mention names right now, but there will be possibly other people that, depending on how this topic flows and goes and how popular it becomes, that may come out as well. But it seems like from my research and Brother Farooq's research and some of the other mashayikh that we've spoken to, that this phenomenon is most likely the jinn. However, if it ends up being extraterrestrials, there's not an issue because Islam can account for this. Islam already mentions Allah has created other beings throughout the heavens and the earth. So there is that possibility as well. Or even if it's spun in that way, because remember, what you get from the government if and when disclosure happens, you know, some would say disclosure is already happening, right? Because of all of this, these whistleblowers. So a soft type of disclosure has already been underway since 2017. But if and when disclosure happens, the government officially comes out and gives a statement, you know, the president comes out and, you know, says, yes, there are extraterrestrials amongst us or whatever the case is. And they say they are extraterrestrials, you know, it may not be the case that that's actually the case, you know, because remember, what we get from the government isn't necessarily always true. Now, I can see the reasons why a secular government may choose to go down the extraterrestrial route and use that as an official statement as opposed to anything else that may be supernatural in nature. Because, look, I mean, let's face it, extraterrestrials, biological creatures from another planet, is far more easily digestible than to refer to a supernatural being that's been present on Earth, you know, far longer than we have and has been here, etc., etc. Although many are entertaining this idea as well now. I think it's an easier pill to swallow, and it's more in line with the sort of secular materialist narrative as well. But regardless, whichever way the coin falls, we have an explanation from an Islamic perspective. But what I would say is, if we really study it, the jinn hypothesis seems to be stronger currently as things stand. So yeah, that's the presentation, bro. I don't know if you have any specific questions in regards to.
Thank you for being so patient. Thank you very much for that. Indeed, absolutely fascinating, actually. And I must admit, this whole new jinn hypothesis was new to me until very recently, actually. I've been obviously, like many people, focusing on the ET angle of the phenomenon, but this is very interesting indeed. And I'm just reminded, you constantly alluded to the secular age we live in, people no longer believe in the supernatural and so on. And although that's formally true, our civilization is very materialist in its outlook, whether it be in medicine or science or the media and so on. In terms of the popular level, people, you see it online, enduring fascination with people in general, with angels or the miraculous or prayer or even the occult and so on, and UFO-like phenomena as well. It's not like we've all become Richard Dawkins atheists, hardcore materialists. Yeah. So I think that's, but even majority of self-called atheists, self-designated atheists, according to recent research, actually do believe in the supernatural anyway, whether it be life after death or angels and so on. So there seems to be this disconnect between, you know, we're no longer formally going to church. We don't go to church anymore. I mean, I'm not talking about Islam here, but other religions. But it doesn't mean that most people are just materialists. Far from it. They're very interested in spirituality, as they call it, rather than religion. And so the story continues. And what you're talking about is very much within that public interest of phenomena, which is so widely reported. So I'm very, very grateful for your research. And there is an article you've written for the Sapience Institute, which I'll link to in the description below if you want some more academic references or want to simply ponder a written form. I think, is it your presentation here is based on that, or is it simply a...
Yeah, so it's based on the article itself. The article is more of an introductory article, because, you know, I thought it was a good idea to put something out for now And then see how things go. And then maybe there may be a need for something more detailed to be written on this. So yeah, it's a good place to start in regards to this hypothesis, at least, and to sort of see the sort of correlation between the two. And like I said, Ro, this is, like you mentioned as well, people have experiences all the time, even like secular people today. You know, the common folk have had, if you ask most people, have you had an experience in your life, a supernatural experience? I can bet most people, I would say probably 90% plus, would say yes, they've had some form of supernatural experience or unusual experience, even if they don't like the term supernatural. So it's, you know, people are open to this stuff. And you see this with this, it's created a lot of fascination. A lot of people are interested in this. And a lot of people are looking for answers. And now, recently, over the past couple of months, people have started to look at what religions are saying. So Joe Rogan, for example, on one of his recent podcasts, you know, he directly mentioned people that spoke to him and discussed the whole demons and angels explanation. But I think from an Islamic perspective, we have a far more comprehensive explanation because it makes sense of many aspects of this phenomenon, not just one. And it seems like what people are witnessing today are things that people witnessed, you know, have been witnessing throughout the centuries and throughout the ages. You know, yes, people have different names for these beings, you know, like people do from different cultures. That's not surprising. But it's there in the Quran. You know, it's, there's a whole chapter on the jinn for anyone that's interested to read further. There's a surah called Surah Jinn, chapter on, called the jinn. And there are many other passages in the Quran that speak about the jinn. Surah Rahman, interestingly, is an address to both humans and to jinn. And we know at the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, there were at least two occasions where the Prophet, peace be upon him, directly gave dawah to the jinn and engaged with them. And at one point they became believers and they took the message back to their communities. So we know amongst the jinn, they are believing jinn, etc. And they may be jinn from different backgrounds with different abilities. Again, you know, just like Farouk mentioned this the other day, said, just like human beings, we have many different humans across the world with different capabilities and abilities from different cultures and background. Even today, you have humans that live in remote parts of the Amazonian rainforest that don't even have a spoken language. And then you have these PhD scientists who are very academic, etc., in another part of the world. Similarly, it may be the case amongst the jinn, you have many different types of jinn with different abilities, you know, which seems to be the case, again, when you read the Quran, that some jinn have certain abilities and others don't. So yeah, it's an interesting topic, and I think it's good for Muslims from the you know, that one, they learn more about the jinn, two, that they have some options as far as hypotheses are concerned in regards to this phenomenon. You know, regardless of what's said about it, what the official statement is, there are options on the table, and we can make sense of this phenomenon either way. And from a non-Muslim perspective, I think it's interesting because it's a untapped area, even for researchers. They haven't looked into what Islam has to say in regards to this phenomenon. Very few have. Only one comes to mind, but the rest haven't. So it's an interesting avenue for non-Muslims to look into the Islamic tradition, especially in regards to this topic and the jinn. So yeah, I think it's fascinating, and I think it's going to become more prevalent as the years go by. I think, obviously, with Lou Elizondo's book dropping in a couple of weeks, you know, there may be a bit more noise online on social media. So I think it's interesting. I think Islam has a lot to say in regards to this topic, because you know, the Vatican has already been asked for a public statement a couple of times, and they haven't said much as far as I'm aware of what I've read. It's only a matter of time until the Muslim world is also asked, you know, in regards to its position on this phenomenon. And I think it's a beautiful thing that we can say that, yeah, we have, you know, it could be this or it could be this, you know, and we're happy to let you guys, you know, as soon as you know what it is, then we can let you know which one it's, you know, whether it falls into this category or this category. It's fine. We can make sense of it. It's not an issue.
Okay. Fascinating news. We'll watch the news for those disclosures, hopefully, from the Vatican or elsewhere in the future. I think that's probably an excellent presentation. And thank you very much, Imran Hussein. And inshallah, we'll keep our eyes on this. And do let us know through your social media platforms and your writings of any developments in this field so we can keep in touch. But thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Really appreciate your time. And thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Till next time. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum, bro. Take care.
Thank you. Assalamu.